lovers, whoever you are, I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you. You be brave, young lovers, and follow your star. Brave and faithful and true. And cling very close to each other tonight. I've been in love like you. And I know how it feels to have wings on your
head. I'm Michael Ray Dresser, and you're listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. And each night, we'll bring you the best, the brightest authors and experts with solutions, the topics you want to hear, and the people who know to bring them to you. So let's do it together. Let's get to the heart of the issues that face us every day, right here, right now, on Dresser After Dark, coast to coast, and around the world on the BBS Radio Network.
I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to fly down the street in a trance. You wing down that street on the chance that you'll meet, and you meet, not by chance. Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do. Say, don't cry because I'm alone. All of my memories.
Attorney Michael Hohmeyer is with us, the co-host on It's the Law segment of Dresser After Dark. Hey, Michael, welcome back.
Thanks, Michael Ray. Always great to be with you.
How are you? Maybe I shouldn't ask.
Terrific.
Oh, wait. Maybe I shouldn't ask. Michael, I've been watching what's been going on lately in the news. Some of the very interesting things, I just hit a couple of them and then we'll get to topic. I think it's the state of Indiana right now that wants to, in their school system, they want to get rid of handwriting. It takes too long for the students to learn. They're just going to use technology at this stage of the game. And these things are going on and on and on. And the world that we know, the America that we know, Michael, seems to be getting diluted and is disappearing day by day by day.
Programs like yours remind people of what's going on. In case they're missing it, they need to know what's happening in their community and their state and their country. And it's the new media, like Dresser After Dark and the Internet and blogs and talk radio of all kinds, that's getting information out to people. It's empowering them. The mainstream media is not their only source of information. And when people hear about this nonsense, they're not taking it anymore, which is one of the big lessons of the last 2 years politically. People are saying, okay, this is really stupid and silly, and life is too serious, many of these things, to allow for the stupid and the silly. We've got to step in and take it back, and people need to do that as much in their local communities, with their school districts, where they're teaching, you know, whatever kind of silliness that some supposedly better than us, smarter than us person, administrator usually, thinks is the right thing to do. People need to step in as much on the local level as they're interested in on the national level and have their voice be heard and say, enough of this silliness and nonsense. We've got to get back to basics.
Michael, one of the things that are happening, and there's committee after committee after committee, like the one that met yesterday, very interesting, but what's going on is the administration is appointing committees, and the committee's final words are the law. They can't be they can't be tested. They can't be challenged. It's the law, quote unquote. And this gives our world and our life to people who we didn't elect, people who were chosen by the elected officials to do particular jobs that end up controlling what goes on in this country. I'll give you a real quick one with the, and I'm sure you've heard of the possibility of taking obese kids away from their families. You're looking at literally millions of kids that are obese today. Now, if you took every one of those kids away from their family, there are not enough foster homes to be able to handle these kids. There is no way. So what's the government going to have to do? Quote, unquote, the government is now going to have to create housing for these children. And if they create housing for these children, they will create education for these children. And now you've got your automaton. You've got a child taught and controlled and manipulated by an ideology that has a particular agenda underneath it that drives it.
You know, there was a book, 1984, I think was the title, that spoke about when it written, 1984 was way off in the future, and what was being predicated there, and I think it was also in Brave New World, where people were saying, hey, at some point the government's going to want to take over everything, and when those books came out, everybody scoffed. and said, oh, that's really ridiculous. It'll never get that way. It's a slippery slope argument that says you give an inch, they'll take a mile, and before you know it, you know, they've gone all the way. Well, guess what? The slippery slope, unfortunately, really happens, where people start saying, you know, there shouldn't be as much candy in a school lunch, and before you know it, they're saying, we're taking away your kids. So the little things that start off being kind of silly and nonsensical and busy Americans don't pay attention to, now we have all had enough years and years and years of this, the last 30, 40 years of this, and we see these slippery slopes actually do slide you all the way to a really bad place. And happily, Michael Ray, because of shows like yours, and others, people are saying, we see what's going on, we're going to stand up. They have to stand up and say, you're not taking my kid just because he may be a little overweight. Who are you to judge me anyway? You're no better than me. We reject the idea that the inside the Beltway elites or the people with a Harvard degree know better than regular American folks. They don't. And happily, a huge groundswell of people in this country are saying, we're not going to allow this anymore. That's the hope for our future, Michael Ray, to take it back, to get back to common sense, value-driven society.
What's frightening, Michael, is this. I take a look at the President of the United States. I watched him say and listened to him say one thing. Months later, there is something completely different that comes out of his mouth. I have watched the divide, and if I have to repeat this 5 million times, let's take a look at it. There's a division now, and every time you turn around, there's a division of something. Look at the gay community and the division that has happened there, and the president is behind it. Whatever it is, good, bad, or indifferent, it's created a division. There is now a division in the way with unions. There is now a division. I mean, this list goes on and on and on. And there are so many divisions and so many people fighting against each other. That's when the smart ones come in underneath and control the entire thing.
Well, we've often heard about the concept of divide and conquer. Those people who are such a small minority, the left, progressivism, has the support of a very small proportion of the population. And the only way they can get their policies in place is if they lie to people, tell them one thing, and then govern differently, which is why the left is never honest about what they truly intend to do and to whom and how hard until they're in office. And we've seen that with this administration, the way they've governed in a radically different way from what they said they would do when they were campaigning. The only way these people can take power is the divide and conquer and, you know, the out-and-out lie scenario or strategy. They've employed that. The difference, again, I keep saying this, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but the difference is that people see it for what it is. The alternative media says, look, what you said in 2008 when you were running for office is not what you've done for the last 2.5 years. There's lie after lie after lie. There's, at best, a different policy than what was said was going to be the policy pursued when the campaign was underway. People say, you've blown your integrity. I don't trust you anymore. Anything you say, I don't believe. Now, the true believers who support the left and who support the administration, you're not going to change their minds. The independents, those are the ones who are open to hearing a message that comes from you and your program and other sources in the alternative media. Those people are listening. I believe they're paying attention. They believe that they were sold a bill of goods. They're not happy with all of the points that you've raised today, Michael Ray, that are happening, and most regular independents as well as conservatives don't like that. They're not going to forget, and I believe they're going to continue to have their voices heard. If not, well, then it's a slippery slope to oblivion for the rest of us. But this is the sure. only way we keep ourselves from going over that cliff, is because people are listening to you and maybe a little bit to me.
No, more than a little bit. And then when we really come down to it, Michael, we're looking at this. I listened to Harry Reid today. Now, when I say listen to him, I walk by. Oh. I caught some of what he had to say. But there was something underneath what he was saying, Michael, and I could be dead wrong on this. I could be just off the chart wrong. But it almost sounded like he wasn't happy with Obama's concern about, you know, the the debt limit and so the debt ceiling and so on and so forth. So there are people that are starting to turn. Now, on the other side of it, and here's where the mixed messages are, they have already raised $86 million for this new election coming up. We're broke. We've got the seniors who may not get money. We've got people on disability who may not get money. We have people losing their homes. We have all of this going on, and the job, the jobless, that percentage is going up, and they've raised $86 million to put behind a campaign, the jets and the rest of it. I looked at Obama's gross income in 2008, and it was something like 300 and some odd thousand XXX a year. It is over $4 million a year right now. Nancy Pelosi alone, and go check the records, her income has come up. It's increased 65%. So what is this telling us? Somebody walks they talk the talk, but they do not walk the walk.
Well, that's because despite how the mainstream media has tried to confuse the issue, in fact, the Democratic Party is the party of the poor, if you wish to describe it that way, but also of the rich. The middle class, they belong to the Republican Party and to the Tea Party. Yes, there are exceptions. That's a sweeping generalization, but I think it's pretty accurate. And you see that all the time, and it's because the Democrat Party is the party of the rich as well as of others, but the party of the rich, that he has a chance of reelection. The only way to get reelected is those wealthy people are going to have to put that money into his campaign. $86 million is a start. It's not going to be enough. He's going to have to raise an awful lot more to pull the wool over enough independents to get himself reelected. I think he's in serious trouble, and I don't think $87 million is more than a drop in the bucket he needs if he's going to be able to lie to enough of the people again to get himself reelected.
Yeah, but you see, it boils down to this also, that we're taking a look at what's happening. We're taking a look at all of the quote-unquote, and I don't even, Michael, I don't even like to say the word lies, but that's really what's going on, and it's filtering through the progressive, not the Democrat, but the progressive move.
Yes.
Movement. Is they're getting away with it. They're getting away with it. The man will stand in front of an audience and lie to that audience and smile, and it doesn't matter if they agree or disagree, because he's at that stage now where he's being treated like a king, quote unquote. And with a king, you say nothing, you can't say anything wrong.
Michael Ray, here's the difference: you watch that, and you see through it. You see him for what he is. You see the Democrat Party for what it is. You see the left and the progressives, and the way that they're trying to drive the culture as well as the nation over a cliff. You see it, and you're not the only one, because you're sharing your perspective with a bunch of other people who are saying, I see it too, I get it too, I'm not being fooled. I stood up last year and voted for a change. I'm going to stand up next year and vote for a change. That is our hope for the future, that there are people who are able to get educated by folks like you and everybody else who makes their contribution in the alternative media. This is what's going to save our souls.
And then the posteriors, too. Now, by the way, when it really comes down to it, there are a few things that have been on the blogs, and every once in a while, you know, I rarely will I give you something that I don't have the backup proof of what I'm talking about, because otherwise then it becomes hearsay, and who's going to trust anything that anybody said. But there was something that was on the blogs, and I sent you a copy of this today. And interestingly enough, if you read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, step by step by step, you will see exactly what's going on in the administration today. Now, this is just from a blog post, and this is just someone's opinion now. And as I write this, Mr. Obama is ready to crash the economy by refusing to abandon his mandate to raise taxes along with the debt ceiling. In his mind, this is a win-win situation. If the Republican compromise and go along with his plan, it'll split the party, crash the economy, and get him reelected. If the Republicans hold out, Obama will crash the economy, blame it on the GOP, and get reelected. You see, Our bonds will be lucky to get a 2-star rating, which will increase the interest of our debt service, your mortgage, and your car payments. Mission accomplished. Any way you look at it, the way they've set it up, they're going to win.
I understand that point of view. I don't subscribe to it. I am perhaps too much of an optimist.
I won't let it happen either.
As a Reagan Republican, I still believe and have faith in the common sense of the American people. And given the alternative media like you and other programs, people are getting the real information. They're getting the real skinny. They know that it's the real skinny, and they're not going to allow that to happen. There are alternatives to those two extreme scenarios, and I think we will find one. The alternative is we at least restrain things from going over the cliff for the next year, and then in November, we get a change.
Okay, but here's the problem. Here is one of the problems. And yes, I want to change, and I'm a John Wayne Republican, so yes, I'm ready to do it. Now, the key here is this, that with the separations, obviously, you know Sheila Jackson Lee, all right? Now, Sheila Jackson Lee just said she would prefer some names that reflect African-American culture to the Hurricanes, okay, such as Shanika, Tinashe, whatever, okay? Now, these are things that she said, and now this is the big one. She'd also like the weather reports to be broadcast in language that street people can understand, because one of the problems that happens in New Orleans, one of the problems that did happen, is that the black people couldn't understand the seriousness of the situation due to the racially biased language of the weather report. Now, people are being fed that kind of information. What are you supposed to do about that? That, in and of itself, that's more of a divide. Michael, that is a wedge, and it separates people. You get people to hate you that you didn't do anything to get them to hate you, but now all of a sudden we are looking at, let's name this that, because if you don't, you're a racist. Let's talk a language that the average person in that particular area understands, because if you don't, you cause their death. This is garbage.
You know, Michael Ray, you and I will never find a point of common agreement with Sheila Jackson Lee. We don't need to. The people who believe her and vote for her are a minority, and we just need a majority to agree with us. Not everybody, just a majority, and that's all we need, and that's everything we need. If we don't have it, it's all going to go, you know, in a handbasket. If we do have it, we can arrest this decline. We can stand up and be proud and restore America. It either happens next year or it doesn't. I believe that it will, and that's because she'll be just a voice out in the wilderness, and people like her, but the vast majority of common-sense Americans are going to say, we reject that. We reject the efforts to split us and divide us against each other. We reject the paternalism of the state-loving folks, and we're taking our country back. Let's hope so.
But more than hope. Michael, I think the biggest problem is this. When we begin to separate, we talked about this early on in the show, the separation of the ideologies in school, the separation of the ideology with the ethnicities and the unions, and the list goes on. I mean, I spend 2 hours giving you a list. The problem is, are the people that are affected most by this are the people who have been told, and they've created this victimology. And they've been told that they're victims. And what these things do when somebody like Lee says what she says, it does nothing more than reinforce that somebody's a victim. And if I'm a victim, it's got to be somebody's fault, and I'm going to point a finger. That's a problem. It is a major problem, and it's a problem that was created that's not a reality.
But in order to have any chance of fixing that particular problem and the problems like it, we need to retake the country. And if a majority will do that, these other issues, which are small in and of themselves, although they add up to be seemingly a deafening crescendo, they can be pushed back. We have no chance of fixing those smaller issues if we don't prevail on the larger issues, and that is we've got to retake the government, we've got to trim it back, we've got to return it to its rightful role in the balance against the ordinary person, and return most of the power that the Constitution says the ordinary folks in the states actually have. If we don't accomplish that, all the other smaller battles will be lost. This is the major fight of our times. And at this point, this is probably going to be the most important election coming up next year that most of us will see in our lifetimes, in fact. And so if we win that big one, we have an opportunity to start addressing these other issues that you're talking about. Otherwise, it's going to be dark.
And by the way, next week we'll talk about what we were going to talk about this week, the debt ceiling negotiations.
They'll still be fighting.
I interviewed a woman that's the that was there yesterday and actually participated in the negotiations. We'll talk about it next week. But she was totally upset because the people who are making the decisions are not elected officials. That's what I'm starting to talk about at the beginning of the show. Michael Hallmeyer, website we can find you at?
We're at www.hallmeyerlaw.com, spelled HOMEIERLAW.com.
Wonderful. Hey, Michael, see you next week.
Can't wait, Michael Ray.
Take care. Good night.
Tonight.
Such as Mexico, Sweden, Hawaii, Japan, and Capri. There's so many exciting and wonderful places, mountains and jungles and desert oases. Pleasant as home is, it isn't what Rome is, so why stay there when there are so many fabulous faraway places to see? Why should Spain and Tahiti and Rio just be only names to you and me? I feel certain there's people we'd be glad to know there. So tell me, why don't we get up and just go there? Go to those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London. Wonderful, fabulous places we're longing to see. There are so many simply incredible places to see. When I think of the warm Caribbean, I see a new world for you and me. I'd give anything just to have one single day there. And once we get there, I know that we'll stay there. Stay in those fabulous places where we long to be.
I'm Michael Ray Dresser, and you are listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark.
Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, Siam, Siena, Vienna, Verona, Java, Jamaica, Bombay, Barcelona. Show me those fabulous places we're longing to see.
Danny Bernardo Brigitte with us. He is the author of The Omega Days, Unlocking the Prophecies for the Last Days. He's a civil engineer, and he's got his master's degree with the University of Pangasinan, and that's the Pangasinan State University in the Philippines. And he currently works for the City of Toronto's Technical Services Division. He immigrated to Canada in 2005. He was an elder of a Toronto church and led the church's Hope Cell Group ministry. He left the church recently because he was not allowed to teach about his book as it was contrary to the traditional beliefs. And hi, Danny, welcome to the show.
Hello, good evening, Michael Ray. It's an honor to be with you tonight.
Thank you so much.
Honor and privilege. Yeah.
Dan, let me ask you two things. What is, did I pronounce your last name properly? How do you pronounce your last name?
Oh, just pronounce it as H, Bahit.
Bahit.
Some pronounce it as Bajit, but it's pronounced as H, as Bahit.
Oh, Bahit. Say it one more time.
Yeah. Bahit.
Say it
Bahit.
Bahit, okay. And then the university, did I say that right? Is it Pangasinan?
Oh, yes, Pangasinan. It's my province way back in the Philippines.
We're good to go. Okay, let's go to the issue, the Omega Days. Now, obviously, we just heard you just recently left the church because they wouldn't allow you to teach about your book. What was it that caused you to take a look at the prophecies, the last days, and really get a handle on what Armageddon is?
Oh, yes. Michael, I've been studying the prophecies for more than 20 years. I read countless of books about prophecies and combined them all together, and it looks like, to me, nothing comes close to the real meaning of what is happening to the world today. I spent the last 20 or 30 years looking and observing around me and comparing it with the Word of God, the Bible. And I have experienced more than enough to say, well, the Bible is true. What is happening in the world today is true. But in order to know these things, you have to realize that so many basic truths have to be understood. Like, you have to understand that the origin of nations, the prophecies about the tribes of Israel and their enemies, and be able to locate them in the present world. Because the world in the ancient times is very small. Now they have covered the whole globe, okay? Now they have to pinpoint where they are now at the present world. The second thing that you need to know is that the European Union and the United States of America, okay, are the descendants of Ephraim and Manasseh, who are the two sons of Joseph. They are the 10 lost tribes or the lost sheep of Israel. You have to accept that as a fact. And also,
okay, let me hold you up just for a second, okay? I'm not a Bible scholar, so bear with me. I'm listening to what you're saying, and one of the things that came to me as you were saying what you were saying, if I was the Antichrist, which I'm not, but if I was the Antichrist, I would not want to make my appearance obvious to the world. I would want to cloak it. I would want to hide it underneath other information and agendas. Originally, early on, I heard the Antichrist was supposed to come out of Africa and so on and so forth. No, you're saying that he's coming out of Iraq. I really believe that it couldn't be that simple. That information could not have been that readily accessible. If there is an Antichrist coming and Armageddon is coming, it has to sneak up on you. And I think with what we are seeing in the world today, and I'm not a very religious person, but I really believe what we're seeing in the world today, all of the earmarks of what the prophecies have predicted is starting to take place.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right, Michael. Actually, the Antichrist, when he'll be coming to rule a particular nation, it's just like everybody accept him as a rightful leader. He will become so popular because he will change the whole setup of government. And nobody will believe him as the Antichrist. Only by the time that he will destroy all religions, then the people will come to know that this is really the Antichrist. And that will be very, very close to the end. Like, it is just counting 3.5 years before the end. And so many Christians by then are already killed. And what is left on earth are those followers of him. So those who know that he is the Antichrist will actually be eliminated. So he will create a new system of government. He will change the time and laws. He will even change the whole concept of religion, because all the people will be forced to believe in him as God. So that's what the Bible says about the activities of the Antichrist later on.
Okay, in your mind, with the research that you've done, the studies that you've done, what you've uncovered, and all of those commonalities of information, all the commonality of information that you've created, if you were to choose somebody, who do you think the Antichrist would be?
Oh, what I can only answer you, Michael, is the Antichrist will be coming from the nation of Iraq right now. Iraq right now is the old Babylon, yeah.
Okay, so he's not here yet.
Particularly name the person, yeah.
Okay,
the Antichrist will come from the nation of Iraq. By the way, Iraq is the ancient Babylon. He will come from that same nation. So that particular king from Iraq, which is, by the way, today is very low and poor nation, the Bible says he will come to grow and become very, very powerful. So whoever that king that will rise from Iraq, will soon become the Antichrist.
No, by the way, is there enough time for this Antichrist to come from Iraq to build the power that he would need to build to move it across the pond to get to the United States?
I only rely on what the Bible says, because the Bible says the Antichrist will specifically come from the ancient capital of Nineveh, as mentioned in Nahum 1:11. So Nineveh is just 90 kilometers north of Baghdad right now. So if the Bible is true, then this Antichrist should rise from that particular town of Nineveh, and he will restore the old kingdom of Babylon.
Okay, now but let me ask you this. Okay, so we've got the Antichrist coming. We've got evil coming. We've got the Armageddon coming. What about God? What about the other side? What about the force of the power of the good? Is God going to sit back and allow this thing to happen to us? What happened to the reach, the feel, and the power of God?
Okay, according to the book of Daniel, there will be 7 years of tribulation, of which 6 of these years will be on the side of the Antichrist. In those 6 years, God will be particularly silent, because according to the Bible, all the saints, all the Christians, all the believers will be subject to the Antichrist. No power whatsoever, no salvation from God will assist them, except before the tribulation period, few Christians will be taken away to a wilderness, not the rapture, but a temporary refuge from the evils of the Antichrist. So in the book, I mention about the nation of Greenland. Okay? That is mentioned in the book of Isaiah as the desert of the sea. So if you analyze the desert of the sea, it's made of ice, it's barrenness, it's wilderness. So this particular nation of Greenland will be a terror, and Antichrist will be alarmed by that nation. Because from there, those taken to that nation, taken by God to that nation prior to the tribulation, will become the army of God. And then, after the reign of the Antichrist for 6 years, and then the day of the Lord will come to avenge the death of so many Christians, of so many believers.
Danny, but is this
the coming of the Lord God?
Yes? Let me hold you. Is this specifically for Christians? What about the Jews? What about the Buddhists? What about other religions? Or is it specifically for Christians only? What happens to those of other faiths?
Oh yes, even those non-Christians. That's why during the tribulation period, the angel of the Lord will spread the gospel. Okay, he will spread the gospel for all the nations to hear, and only then they will know the real God. Actually, the tribulation is the opportunity for all the living people during those days will have the opportunity to hear about the gospel, and that opportunity will come in a very short and three and a half years when the angel will be spreading the gospel, and it's very effective. I tell you, it's a very effective gospel, a way of evangelization, so many will accept the Lord.
I was going to say, so just to get a mental image of this, then we'll move out of America like we ran from Egypt, and it would almost be like the Red Sea parting, except we're talking about an ocean, and it may not part, but we'll get there, and then we'll end up in Greenland.
Oh, no. This particular exodus, when we will be crossing the Atlantic Ocean, will be leading to Jerusalem, not in Greenland. The way to get to Greenland is by God will be snatching them out like instant travel to the island of Greenland. It's just like you travel by air and you just land there as you are provided, as the Book of Revelation says, you will be provided like a wings of an eagle to get to Greenland.
Okay, that makes sense. In our modern world, the wings of an eagle will be aircraft. Danny, we're starting to run out of time. Do you have a website we can find you at, buy the book?
Oh, yes. Go to my website, www.theomegadays.net, and it will tell you the summary of the book. And you can also purchase the book from there. And it will explain to you the detail of everything what I'm saying.
Wonderful. Hey, Danny, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And I've appreciated your time.
Thank you very much, Michael. And it's my honor and my privilege.
Good night.
Good luck. Bye. So tell me, why don't we get up and just go there? Go to those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London. Wonderful, fabulous places we're longing to see. There are so many simply incredible places to see. When I think of the warm Caribbean, I see a new world for you and me. I'd give anything just to have one single day there. And once we get there, I know that we'll stay there. Stay in those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, Siam, Siena, Vienna, Verona, Java, Jamaica, Bombay, Barcelona. Show me those fabulous places we're longing to see.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You are listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark, Chasing Youth Culture and Getting It Right, How Your Business Can Profit by Tapping Today's Most Powerful Trendsetters and Tastemakers. Author Tina Wells is with us, founder of Buzz Marketing Group, earned her BA in Communications Art, graduating with honors from Hood College in 2002. Currently a Wharton School of Business student for Marketing Management, Tina continues to create innovative marketing strategies for numerous clients within beauty, entertainment, fashion, financial, and lifestyle sectors. She's worked with clients including Maidenform, Sony, BMG, PBS, Sesame Workshop, American Eagle Outfitters, and the list goes on. And let us say, Tina, hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. I think the biggest problem that we have with youth today in dealing in business is we don't speak the same language. I go back to a time when if you went to work, you got there at 9 o'clock, you stayed till 5, you did your job and you left. Today, you can do the very same thing sitting on the beach under the sun, just enjoying yourself with a BlackBerry or an iPad. And that's a language that most people in business have got to get used to because we've got a completely different consumer now. And if we don't speak the language of the consumer or the language of the people we hire, we are in trouble.
I couldn't agree more.
What made you look at this subject?
Well, you know, I started my agency, Buzz Marketing Group, 15 years ago when I was 16. So it's quite easy to do the math on how old I am now. But, you know, I've always had this hunch that there was a huge disconnect between what young people really wanted and what the companies that create products for them think that they want. And so I've always seen my role as just this kind of liaison between young people and the companies that target them. And I wanted to create or write this book really just to kind of explain this generation a bit more. I think that there were so many myths out there, and, you know, in every chapter I kind of break down some millennial myths, like, you know, they're overly wired and they feel entitled, and you know, some of these things are true, but there are many things that through the book we found, you know, really weren't as, especially for me, weren't as I thought they were.
Now, by the way, what was the biggest surprise for you when you really delved into it? What was that one thing you sat back and you took a look at and thought, oh, now I get it?
I think for me it's a relationship with technology. And one of the things I had to realize was, you know, I was born in 1980. You know, I had my first cell phone when I was 20 years old. So, you know, I had a cell phone for 11 years. I didn't have an email address till I was 16. And so just because that was my experience doesn't, and I'm constantly introduced to new technology and it amazes me and I become obsessed with it, doesn't mean that millennials, and especially the youngest millennials, see things that way. You know, we're talking about teens, tweens who have had email addresses, you know, cell phones most of their lives. Yeah. These aren't really big deals to them. And so I had to kind of take myself out of the equation in the way I felt about technology and realize that, you know, these younger millennials just don't feel the same way. They know how to have an appropriate relationship with technology.
Oh, sure. Radio Susie's daughter was born, I think it was 1989, and she was one of the last, the very last kids to graduate high school and remember what it was like not to have a cell phone. Really? You know, and you said you were born in 1980. You are forgiven.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No, it's okay. No, but seriously now, there is a difference. There's a complete difference between the boomers, the Gen X, and you're basically, you fall into just the very end of Gen X and then the millennial generation. There is such a disconnect between the different generations. That doesn't mean that you can't connect. But what it does mean, if you don't understand it, you're in trouble.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, I think that the connection and part of, you know, my thoughts behind writing the book was to really kind of help older, and I consider myself to be an older person, by the way, to help us understand them more, because I do think that there are a lot of things that just are misunderstood.
Oh, no, absolutely, and I got it loud and clear, because I really believe we have also an e-consumer. We have a different consumer today. The consumer thinks differently than the consumer of 1980, of 1990,
oh, absolutely.
2000. And, you know, we live in this transparent world. I bought a car recently, and the place was called CarMax, and I happened to see them come through on the website. And then I called over there and I talked to one of the, now, by the way, this was an associate. This was not a salesperson, quote unquote. And I basically told them kind of sort of what I was looking for. Within about, three or four days, I got slammed with emails and pictures and prices and whatever. So in essence, the world today, you can't sell anything to anybody. We do not like to be sold, but we love to buy. And I think it's framed in a completely different way. You can hit a button, get anything you want. So you have to have the people who know that world to be backing you up if you're in business.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that that's a great way to phrase it. We hate, you know, I think that Gen Y likes marketing, but I agree, you could almost call them Gen Buy. I mean, that's a really funny thing. It's just, you know, I think they do like buying. I think they like shopping for value, and I think they like being marketed to, really, as a way to say, like, yes, I'm worth it. My dollars are worth it, but they're not just going to buy any old thing.
Yeah, and by the way, when we deal with somebody, you're also dealing about the technology today, and one of your talking points, and we give it to you, the audience, actually, you know, right word for word from your press release, is the technology is rewiring the new millennial. And then when I said early on, when you said 1980, I said, you're forgiven. It was that I got a BlackBerry and it's driving me crazy. So, and you know, in my car, you steer it, but the car is nothing more than a big computer. You press a button, it does this. You press a button, it does that. And if you haven't been brought up with it, it's so confusing. So it's your fault.
Yeah, no.
You know, you're wonderful techie people. But I love it. But that's really what it boils down to, doesn't it?
No, I agree with you. I think so. I think it's really, I think it becomes like you have to find the appropriate place for technology.
Yeah. Yeah. Now being in business and growing a business, how do you deal with them? How do you sit down with them? You know, it's obviously you've got to study them. You have to know them. But how do you communicate with them?
Are you talking about millennials?
Yeah.
I think it's the idea that you're never done knowing them. You know, it's an ongoing conversation. It's not an exercise to say, great, now I know who you are. You know, it's a consistent and constant ongoing conversation. And they're changing every day, all day. You know, what they like today is not necessarily what they're going to like tomorrow. And I think that the moment you feel like you know exactly what they want and who they are, you've already lost.
Yeah. You know, and by the way, because you might know what they are and what they want. That was 2 hours ago. It changes rapidly. And that's why I think marketing to them is just very hard to do if you do not have the strategy.
Oh, absolutely. Strategy is important. And I would say the first step is really the research to, you know, again, stop saying, I know exactly what they want, and go back to, you don't really know anything. Now let's move forward.
You know what? I would, as an old school whatever I am, I really believe in the end result of everything. The end result of everything, whether it be technology, whether it be, you know, something mechanical that doesn't even handle a computer, the end result of somebody making a decision is based on the possibility of emotional satisfaction. So I think that's been the overarching theme from 1776 until today, because it doesn't matter what language you speak. It doesn't matter what kind of a product, a service, or something. If somebody can see beyond that to being emotionally satisfied for making that decision, whatever that decision is, I think that is the key to all of it. But it's going to take people like yourself to interpret how to reach those people to be able to establish that.
Right. No, I agree.
I'm just giving you the microphone, that's all.
Yeah, no, I feel like this is funny that you're completely summing up my book better than I could. I think that part of the problem when it comes to this generation is that people really assume that they already know. You know, we hear they're entitled. And, you know, what I really kind of hope to break down in the book is there are different types of personalities. There are different ways to market to them, unlike what we're traditionally used to. And so it's really a guide to saying, okay, forget everything you knew, and let's talk about, you know, techies and preppies and alternatives. And let's look at young people in these different tribes, as I call them. And let's not just make these universal, you know, decisions or even have universal thoughts about this generation.
Oh, by the way, no question, because when you really come down to it, it's the ability to understand and to know. It's just like family today. You know, family is going to fall into the same kind of a communication that what we're talking about in business. If you do not understand your kids, then you're going to have a major problem. So I really believe the base of everything is doing what you're talking about, chasing the youth culture, getting it right. Because if you don't get it right, there's a tremendous loss that can happen out there, whether it be economically, morally, emotionally, whatever the case may be. And I'm 5,000% on your side of the table here.
Yeah, and was there anything that you kind of felt as you were reading it that seemed really different than what you might have thought?
It's the confusion that most people have. The aha moment is that they're human beings and they could have been born the same year I was born. And the difference is, the underlying difference is in the culture. And that's really what it is. So when we label them, the millennials, the Gen X, the boomers, the rest of them, it's the idea that understanding what it is that you're dealing with is the way you can be successful in anything. If you don't understand it, or better yet, let me phrase it this way. It's not what you don't know, it's what you don't know that you don't know that gets you in trouble. What you're doing is you're putting the cards on the table and you're saying, this is what it is to know to accomplish your goals. And I think that in and of itself is the first step to get where you want to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. And one thing I think, you know, I wrote the book basically last fall, and what has happened since then is all of these statistics coming out about current, you know, millennials who just graduated from college not really having jobs. And so one of the things I wish I could have even explored more was really this idea about how they're going to be working in the future, and the fact that they, you know, It used to be that you would say to, parents would say, you've got to get a good job, you've got to get a safe job. Well, good, safe jobs, what is that these days? What is a good, safe job? You know, such a thing doesn't really exist anymore. And so what I think I'm most excited about is that these young people are going to feel like there is nothing holding them back from going out and creating whatever, you know, company they want to create with their friends. That there isn't this idea that, oh, I have to go in this direction because this is a safe job.
Yeah, because when you really come down to it, the safety lies within you. And if you take that with you where you go, you create your own. We're becoming a world of entrepreneurial spirit. And there's more and more of the youngsters that are becoming entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs and creating and building and doing, and they're safe within themselves. I give you, you know, Steve Jobs. Look what he did. And I think Jobs has got a high school education. Period.
Yeah.
But he had a dream, and he did it.
Well, and I think that's one thing I love about millennials is that they really are so optimistic. You know, for those of us that know, you know, I've been around long enough to know that what's happening now as far as the recession, it's pretty bad. But for them, they have known nothing but a great, you know, plenteous time, you know. And they're saying, we're going to get back there, you know. And I think that it's that millennial energy and just good feelings that's definitely going to get us back on track.
Yeah. And by the way, I came from the silent generation. Do you know? I'm serious. Before the boomers, there was the silent generation. And I won't tell you what years those were in, because then I'll be in real trouble here.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and there's so many major social issues of our time that, you know, they're really going to have a say in and really a decisive voice. And it's interesting talking to them even about what's going on now. And you know, the fighting between Democrats and Republicans, and they're just really not, you know, they're not into any of this.
No. And that's interesting. That's interesting. You know what? Actually, what a great analogy when you think about it. Going to work or creating a business and touching the millennial generation is the same thing that's going on with the Republicans and the Democrats today. If they would find a commonality base to work with, if they both spoke the same language, they'd get along great. So it's the same thing that's going on in your book, what goes on in politics today.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's this idea that they just really are not only are they not speaking the same language, they're not even interested. You know, that's the bigger part, is there's not even any interest in doing that.
No, I got you loud and clear. Now, we're starting to run out of time. Is there a website, Tina Wells, that we can find you at?
Yes. Our corporate site is www.buzzmg.com, and you will find info on the book there, and you can also find information on a lot of other things I'm working on.
Wonderful. Hey, Tina, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, take care. Good night.
Take care, Michael. Bye-bye.
There's so many exciting and wonderful places, mountains and jungles and desert oases, pleasant as home is, it isn't what Rome is, so why stay there, when there are so many fabulous faraway places to see? Why should Spain and Tahiti and Rio just be only names to you and me? I feel certain there's people we'd be glad to know there. So tell me, why don't we get up and just go there? Go to those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London. Wonderful, fabulous places we're longing to see. There are so many simply incredible places to see. When I think of the warm
Caribbean, I see a new world for you and me. I'd give anything just to have one single day there. And once we get there, I know that we'll stay there. Stay in those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, Siam, Siena, Vienna, Verona, Java, Jamaica, Bombay, Barcelona. Show me those fabulous places we're longing to see.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You are listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Tatoka Webb with us, the author of How to Hang On to Heaven When You're Going Through Hell. She shares a poignant and funny and inspiring story from her humble beginnings to the daughter of a single mother holding her family together in the Nashville housing projects to her rise as the CEO of several companies, choosing to find the light and the love inside of herself and in others, and along in that journey from the lowest valleys of misery to adrenaline-filled tops of personal and professional achievement. And let us say, Chitoka, hi, welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here, because when you really come down to it, your own biography in that very first paragraph really says it all. There's so many people today that are in the throes of misery. They're depressed. They don't think they can ever get away from or above where they're at. And it takes somebody who's been there, done that, to help people walk through it.
Oh, you got it. I was listening to your interview, the young lady that just went off.
Oh, yeah.
And you made a statement to her that safety lies within. It's something that is inside of you. It lies within the person. And so does the power and the strength and the courage to overcome your obstacles. And what I've learned throughout my life and throughout my experiences is that sometimes your obstacles can be your greatest asset, because they show you, they make you aware of the things that you may not have been made aware of, things that you may need to, need some fine-tuning in. And things of that nature. And so that's always a plus when you're trying to do better. That's always a plus when you're trying to move forward.
Now, by the way, an obstacle is a wake-up call. And if you have the ability, yeah. And if you have the ability, and anybody, you of all people will know that to be true based on your past experience. But that obstacle, that challenge, that pain, that whatever it is you're going through is nothing more than you telling you that you have to move in a different direction and take a shift in the way you think about things.
Oh, that's excellent. And also what I've learned, throughout my experiences is that there are so many other moments inside of that moment that you are encountering an obstacle. And I think that sometimes when we are in the midst of transition, or we are in the midst of a situation that, may be painful, or it may be something that we are considering to be dreadful, what we fail to realize is that in that same moment, you have two choices. Either you can let that obstacle overtake you, or you can overtake that obstacle and keep heading towards your goal. So you still have choices, even in the midst of those moments that are tragic, or those moments that, it may feel like a setback to you. It's still an opportunity that exists within that moment. I'll give you an example, if I may.
Please.
When I lost my vision in 2005, without warning, without notice, there was no indication that I was going to lose my sight. By the age of 29, I had founded four companies. I had just purchased my first home. And 2 weeks prior to this particular incident, I was given a clean bill of health from my doctor And 2 weeks later, I was blind. And I remember the day that it happened. There was one thing that kept going through my mind. And the thing that kept going through my mind was, this too shall pass. So while I'm in this particular situation, I can either drown in it or I can visualize what life is going to be like when I get my vision back. So in that one small tragic moment, I learned that even in those moments, you still have choices. You still have options.
You know, let's take this a step farther. Did you get your vision back?
I did.
Okay, all right, okay. Let's talk about symbolically, what is blindness? And I'm going to go right back to the wake-up calls. There's so many of us that don't see beyond what that problem is at the time. And there is also blindness. It doesn't have to be physical blindness. It can be emotional blindness. It can be blindness to what may frighten you in life because you it's not something that you're used to, you're comfortable with. And blindness for you had to be very symbolic, because when you got your vision back, I would venture to guess it was right around the time that it was okay to see again.
Right. Actually, to answer your question as it pertains to blindness, and I think that's a really good point, because most people think that being blind is seeing black. But if you look up the definition of the word blindness, it means that you're not able to see clearly.
Yes.
And what I learned... Uh-huh, go ahead. Were you going to tell me something?
No, I was listening. I was agreeing. I said yes.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. And so the definition of the word blind means not being able to see clearly. And what I learned when I lost my vision was you also see with your mind. And had I not had a clear mind, not only was my vision dark, my mind would have been dark, and I would not have been able to see at all. So I think you have a great point about, you know, missing those blind those messages throughout your life when you know that you're going to encounter something and you don't pay attention to it. So blindness in reality can be something. It can be mentally, and it can be physically.
Sure. Sure. And you can have 20/20 vision and be blind to life, be blind to opportunity, be blind to what's in front of you. And I really believe also that all of the stigma about, you know, if you're a woman, you can't get here. If you're African-American, you can't get there. If you're this, you can't get there. It's stigma. And I think a lot of that also is blindness, because underneath it all, you got something called a human being. And that's the commonality that we all have. I was in the Marine Corps, and I think I said this on the other day on the radio, but it's apropos now, that if you're not, and I, by the way, knock on wood, I was not in a combat situation. I was too young for Korea. By the time Nam came around, I was already in and done. So I would have went if I had to, but it wasn't meant to be. But the point is if you were in a combat situation, that person at your back protecting you, you don't care what color they are, what ethnicity they are, what gender they are, that's your buddy. And that's what people are starting to miss. You have to go beyond that. You have to go beyond what was, and you have to move forward. There was an adage, this thing fell out of my bookcase today, and I wrote it. It's in my words, but I don't know where it came from. But it says, life can only be understood backwards, but you have to live in the present.
Oh, that is excellent. It's almost, I think I've read somewhere that the best way to live life is to live with the end in mind.
Yeah.
So that actually reminds me of that. And speaking about, you know, people being people and respecting each person as a human being, one of the things that I'm most proud of about this book that I have written, the title of the book is Something Inside of Me, and the subtitle is How to Hang On to Heaven When You're Going Through Hell. The something inside of me that I'm speaking about is the Creator, is God. But one of the reasons why I did not give it a name, because you may call your Creator or your God something else, or you may not have one. And I believe that as a human being, whether you have one or you don't have one, it has a name or it does not have a name, I still believe that we, all human beings, have something inside of them that guides them, that leads them, and protects them. And so I wanted the book to cross those barriers, because one thing that I do know for sure is that religion has been wrong. Our culture has been wrong. But the love that we have shown each other, you know, as people of in this nation and across the world, that love has helped us progress. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. We're listening.
Oh, okay. Okay. But that love has helped us progress. So I think what that shows me, not only as an author, but, you know, as a business person, but just as a person in general, how much we can accomplish when we learn to see each other as people and understand that we are so much more alike than we are different. One thing that my mother used to say to my sisters and I very often as a child, and that was to treat people the way that you want to be treated. And she actually said it so much that when I turned about 11 years old, I actually thought that it was a law. And that learning that one principle to treat people the way that you want to be treated, I learned early on how to be respectful of other people's feelings and other people's thoughts. And having that kind of mentality, it actually involved into good manners and good business practices. So really my effort in writing this book is really showing my appreciation for those principles and the things that I learned. And basically, you know, I just wanted to share it with someone else, because one thing that I've noticed as a business owner and as an author, that there is a lot of people that are afraid. There's a lot of people that experience fear, and they don't want to step out of the comfort zone. They don't want to step out of you know, maybe an environment that they've always been in. But what I found is that fear and that sense of being afraid is not because of the thoughts in their mind. It's because of the thoughts in other people's mind.
Yes. Absolutely. No question about it. And the biggest problem that most people have, they won't separate. It was the perfection is not how you are. It's how you think someone else thinks you should be. And that's not true. And that's the problem that most of us have. There's that old adage, you know, better be unhappy than unsure. So I'm going to be what everybody thinks I should be. And I'll stuff myself. I'll be blind, frightened to death, and I'll live my life that way. It's time to step out of it. There's that old adage that says, think outside the box. Now, what that truly means is this, that we all pretty much think the same thing. We mix it up. It comes out a little differently, but it's the same. But the real definition of that is think thoughts you didn't think you could think. That's the key. And it's okay to be who you are, and it's okay to be perfect the way you are, because not everybody's going to like you, and not everybody's going to dislike you. So you take your shot. Those who like you, you stay with. Those who don't, you say thank you, goodbye. There's nothing you can do to make them like you.
That's exactly right. I totally, totally agree with you. And I also think that, you know, one of the things that one can ponder on when dealing with a situation, when you're in, because it can really be tough when you are in an environment and, you know, your mom has done the same thing that her mother did, and your grandmother has done the same thing that her grandmother did, and it just goes on and on and on. But one thing that I try to be mindful of at all times and be very conscious of, you know, as I, you know, walk this earth every day, and that is, one, I'm not always going to be here. And you never know where death is. You never know where it is. And we are so unique as human beings that, and I thought about this, a close relative died about a year ago. And I thought, well, you know, I'm 35 years old, and it's one thing that I have seen, whether it was in America, whether it was in India, whether it was in London, as it pertains to funerals, and that is you come into this world alone, and alone is how you will leave it. So what that lets me know is that every day I need to get closer to myself. Every day I need to, you know, I need to be honest with the things that I need to progress in this life, you know, to make friends in this life, to grow in this life. And so in writing the book, because losing my vision, it was very, 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 very tough for me. And it was not until I realized that, you know what, someone could benefit from my story that I began to look at it differently. And actually, in chapter 12 of my book, there's a chapter, and that chapter is titled, We Have All Benefited from Someone Else's Labor. And, you know, when I look back and during those times when I was blind, it was, you know, I thought about people like Anne Frank. I thought about people like Martin Luther King. I thought about people who put their best foot forward in spite of the situation or the challenges or the obstacles that they were facing. They put their best foot forward for the team. And when I say the team, I mean another human being, whether it be someone here in America, whether it be someone here in India. We are all a part of one universal love that flows without permission. And so as I pondered upon that, the other day I was doing some updates on Twitter and my Facebook page, and I said, it is amazing how most of the things that we enjoy in the privacy of our own home, we didn't make, we didn't create. The shirt that you have on your back, the pants that you have on, the shoes, the phone that I'm talking on now, the chair that I'm sitting in now, all of these things were made by other people. And so I think that once, you know, you can look at life and be conscious of it that way, you know, I think it energizes you and it strengthens you when you are faced with an obstacle. You know, you can look at that situation and think, if I get through this, I can share it. And in sharing it, hopefully someone else's life can be inspired.
Okay, but to you very closely. When you would talk about the clothes on your back and the chairs and the things around you, yes, you did. You created that. You bet you created it. You created it in your life. You manifested it in your life. And I really believe when it comes down to it, when you said that, you know, when you leave alone, I don't think that you leave, because with what you've done and you've written a book, the book becomes a legacy. 100 years from now, somebody will read the book and they will see something that will change their lives. I don't think you ever leave. And most people have the biggest problem with most people is they don't know how to leave the legacy. And it can be done through many, many different ways. You can touch lives and everything that you ever went through, the blindness, the poverty, the rest of it. You got to look back and you got to say thank you.
That's right. And I think that's a good point that you just made, because you're right. Martin Luther King is not here, but his legacy is. Anne Frank is not here, but her legacy is. I think that's a very good point.
Yeah. And by the way, they are too here. King is still here.
Oh, okay.
So she, you know, they physically may be here, but they're much more powerfully here than they were when they were alive. And it is those moments that we have to come up against to realize that look through the moment. As tough as it is, and it's tough, there's no question about it. And there's times when you think you're not going to make it. But if you can just look through it and you begin to realize that how powerful you are. Let me tell you how powerful you are. You close your eyes and the lights go out all over the world.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
You create your own world.
You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. I understand.
Yeah, no, I know. I got it. Loud and clear. I know you do. Okay, we're starting to run out of time. Website we can find you at.
Okay, you got it. It is www.chitokaweb.com, and that's www.chitokaweb.com. And when they go to that page, they will see the links to the Facebook page, the Twitter page, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And there's also a book tour tab, and you can click on that tab and follow me all over the country. I'm currently on a nationwide book tour. And you can also go to Where to Buy page, and there's Amazon, Borders, Barnes & Noble, and IndieBook, and so forth. So all the information is there.
By the way, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Nice job. Go get them.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You inspired me.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Walks in springtime, and a hand to hold the leaves begin to fall, and a love whose burning light will warm the winter night. That's all, that's all. There are those, I am sure, have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are these arms to enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you adore, from now and evermore. That's all. That's all.
I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to thought-provoking talk on Dresser After Dark. Grant Cardone with us. He's the author of the 10 times rule, the only difference between success and failure, how to turn business around. And as a matter of fact, Grant is an international sales training expert, New York Times bestselling author, motivational speaker, whose books, programs have positively affected hundreds of thousands of people and organizations worldwide, Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurs, nonprofit organizations, and individuals use Grant's techniques and systems to increase their effectiveness and value in the marketplace. A regular contributor on Fox and Friends, Grant's also been covered in the Wall Street Journal, CNBC, CNN, and over 700 radio shows nationwide. And let us say, Grant, hi, welcome to the show.
Michael Ray Dresser, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm a big fan of yours.
Oh, hey, thank you so much for being here. You know, I think one of the greatest things that anybody can learn is how to sell something. And one of the reasons I say that is people are frightened to death of that word, marketing, selling, etc. You get married, you fall in love, you ask that person to marry you. She says yes or she says no. She says yes, she's accepted the offer, she's been sold. And I think that in and of itself...
That's right.
Yeah, but we don't understand that.
Yeah, we don't. In this country, we don't. But if you go to third world countries, India or China or the emerging countries, they take selling as though it is an art and a talent to create a middle class. They are trying to push their way up. In America, particularly over the last 2 years because it's been so hard, but prior to that, nobody needed to sell anything because there was free money, credit. Everybody was doing stupid things. People were just buying things crazy. Now,
sure,
we're back to where if you want to be in the middle class or upper middle class where it's safe, or get rich, you have to sell your ideas. It's not just for salespeople anymore. It's for CEOs. It's for anybody that wants to make their life work. You have to sell, just like you use the example with the girl, the guy, or whatever in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it comes down to it, when we've transitioned into an entirely different new world, entirely different new marketplace, there was a time when the old process, get the hidden objection and yada, yada, yada. But the problem today is nobody likes to be sold. We do not like to be sold. But, Grant, we love to buy. And I think that in and of itself, but that transition is where we're at.
Yeah, and people have so many choices today, and they're so better informed. And one of the things I think the disdain you talk about selling has been created by the guys that have said to do the trickery and the manipulation. That's not what people want today. With the prevalence of the internet and people, their ability to shop and get information at their fingertips about any product or service anywhere, from a small purchase of $10 to buying a jet online. People are so informed today. They don't want to be played with. They don't want to be wasted. They don't want their time wasted. We're in a different culture than we were 30 years ago or 20 years ago, where people were misinformed or didn't have information, and you could trick people. First of all, nobody wants to trick anybody anyway. Now, 98% of all people are good.
No,
so
and by the way,
it doesn't work for the salesperson. It doesn't work for the consumer. Everybody loses. So we're in a new age where selling, marketing, and promotion, whether you're an actor or whether you're the guy trying to raise money for a movie, or whether you're trying to get a job, you have to know how to sell, market, and promote yourself to get what you want.
Absolutely. No question about it. And I really believe when it comes down to it, in all the years I've watched the different industries and marketing in the different industries, what it comes down to is what will keep people glued to you is not what you normally think what will keep them glued to you. It's what they want to hear that's going to keep them glued to you. And it's one thing and one thing only, how what you're saying, no matter what it is, a cause, a product, a service, whatever concept, is how it's going to benefit them. And they have to be able to see that. That's the only thing that anybody wants to hear. And benefits even go a step beyond that to the perceived value of the individual. And if you've got the language and the way to communicate that, then all of a sudden you got a bond and a connection with people that most people don't have.
That's right. You know, Bill Gross, who runs the biggest mutual fund, bond mutual fund in the world, $252 billion fund, was in my home 4 weeks ago. He saw that I had four books on my desk. He says, "When did you write these books?" I said, "I wrote them since Lehman's busted," busted is not a correct word, but it's how I talk. So he says, "You've written four books in 2 years?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "You got a ghostwriter?" I said, "No, sir." He picked up this most recent book called The 10X Rule. He says, "Why'd you write so many books?" I said, "Because the whole world shifted 2 years ago. Everybody on planet Earth is now a salesperson. If you want to improve your condition in life, you have to learn how to get out there and sell yourself, be convincing, be persuasive." He picked up this book called The 10X Rule, which came out 2 weeks ago, and it grabbed his attention. He's like, "What is 10X? And I said, "It means you have to set your goals 10 times higher than you thought was necessary." That's what we found out in the last 2 years. And you have to take 10 times the actions necessary to make your company work or your dreams come true. And people have miscalculated what it takes to create success in this country because they've seen it wiped out overnight.
Oh, no question.
So there's been some miscalculation by even the biggest schools in this country about what it takes to actually create a sustainable, successful entity, whether it's a family or a company.
And by the way, I think one of the greatest mistakes most people make, years ago, I was a sales trainer for a radio station, and we used to bring people in, we'd hire them, and we'd run an ad in the paper, and we'd say, "Wanted salespeople for whatever." You get 10, 15, 20 people in at the time. Now, Grant, which was fascinating to me, I'll never forget this, it happened time and time again. The first thing out of my mouth was, "Define what a salesperson is." In those days, it was a salesman, but a salesperson.
Yeah,
you wouldn't believe the definitions that I got. Somebody who steals something, somebody who's going to do this, this, and that, and they were applying for the job. What that taught me in and of itself is somebody really has a problem with that word. You throw it out and you use the word offer, because if you want to define sales, sales is offer and acceptance. And if they get that, all of a sudden, it's completely different. They're moving in the direction they need to be, and everything changes.
That's right. And you just can't get away from it. Like you're saying, you can't get away from this. I just did this show called The Turnaround King that was on National Geographic, where I went into businesses and showed businesses that don't have credit and don't have money how to turn their position around. In every case, in every company that we went into, there was two that was shown on in one-hour segments. But in every case of every company that I've been into in 25 years, selling their products, services, their ideas, their concepts would solve any problem they have, whether it was a little tiny mom-and-pop company or a company as big as, like, Groupon. Groupon, as hot as it is today, their number one initiative today is to add salespeople. Now, that's in an environment where unemployment is an issue everywhere. So if you go back as far as the Great Depression, the last people that were let go in the Great Depression were salespeople. They were really the only people that could get jobs in that economy, because what happens is the business has to have money. Revenue is the name of the game today. And if you can sell and promote and market, not in a bad way, but if you know the right way to do it in the 21st century, anyone can create any success they want, even in today's economy.
Let me give you what I've learned in a nutshell, and it's critical. I've asked people thousands of times, I've asked these two questions. The first question is on the radio, any media, what is it that you're personally selling? What are you promoting? What is it that you are personally selling to that audience in an interview? And I get back, I'm selling books, I'm selling products, I'm selling information, I'm selling myself, et cetera, et cetera. The second question, I'm going to answer that in a second. The second question is, you're doing a project at home. You want a hole in the wall. So you go to the hardware store to get a drill, which is going to make the hole. The question is, are you buying the drill or are you buying the hole? The answer to that is the difference between reaching 90% or 10% of the people you're dealing with. You are buying what the drill can do, which happens to be the hole. You don't sell products. Exactly. You don't sell services. Now, let me just answer this one thing and then we'll move forward. What somebody is selling is one thing and one thing only when it comes down to it. It's not the drill, it's the hole. And the hole is a solution to a problem or the probability
that's
of gaining
right.
some. Yeah, that's it. That's the only thing that's going
to sell. That's right. Absolutely right. You know, it took me 13 months to get the woman that I'm married to that's having my second child to go out with me. She's having my second child now, okay? Had I not known how to persist, persuade, market myself, promote myself, I would be with somebody I don't want to be with. People do this in relationships. They do it in jobs. They do it with their money. Money's not the people's problem today. It's the inability to go attached to money, because there's no shortage of money on planet Earth. We just keep printing more when there's a shortage.
And you take it a step further.
There is a shortage of people that know how to go attached to it. To go get it. And like you said, it is the solution. It is the hole that people want.
Yeah, and with your wife, you know, the question, did she fall in love with you or did she fall in love with how you made her feel? That's really what it is. And how she felt about you being the person that you are. So it wasn't you hear what I'm saying. It was how you made her feel. That was all in the offer.
Yeah. Well, it was that persistence, that confidence. Most people would have given up after a month of no return phone calls. But I knew she was the right one for me. And I also understand that selling's not a bad thing. That some people are like, oh, you stalk your wife? I'm like, dude, she's my wife now. That's not stalking. That's success.
Yeah, you bet.
So if you know you want something. If you know you want something, don't lower your standards. That's what America does today. Oh, I can't get what I want. So they give up and they lower their standards. Okay, I'll go take this instead. No, keep your standard up and learn how to get it.
No, absolutely. And by the way, I think what you are doing today is most potent and powerful. And the reason for that is this. We are in a quote-unquote job-hungry society. The unemployment rate is skyrocketing and people are becoming entrepreneurs now. But as an entrepreneur, you may have a great idea, but where are you going to learn how to market it? Where are you going to learn how to put it out there where people will be able to see it, feel it, and be exposed to it? That's why the 10 rules, the things that you're doing, people need what you have right now. More than any other time in this country, it's mandatory and it's critical.
Yeah, more than any other time in the 53 years I've been alive, people have to embrace this skill or they're going to be punished. And it's not going to be for, you know, don't look for next Monday's job reports or 100 Mondays from now for it to be different. You have job problems for 5 years minimum in this country. And the people that are going to get jobs are the people that can get in front of the executive of the company, not the HR department. Resumes will not get people jobs today. You have to get in front of the executive decision maker of the company and convince them that you're indispensable, irreplaceable, that you add more value than the other 300 people that may have sent in a resume last week, and you proved it because you got in his office. Those are the people that still get jobs today.
Yes, and you've got to be able to fill the hole, fill the gap that they're looking for. And I think that's so critically important. And doing exactly what you said, it's a strategy. It is a process to do that, and then it just doesn't happen. What you're talking about is the difference between accidental and intentional results.
That's right. Absolutely.
Now, let me ask you this. We're starting to run out of time. We've got a couple of minutes to go. I pick the book up. I read it page by page, cover to cover. Grant, what's my takeaway? What do I, Michael Ray, get that I didn't have before I read the book?
Two things. One, people do not achieve their goals because they set goals that are too low. The goals people are setting, they're not interested in. They're not interested in. The second thing, because if you're not interested, you're not going to take action. If you keep lowering your standard or that thing that you want to go after in life, then you'll keep lowering the actions necessary to get anything. So you have to plan for a trip that's exciting. So I would tell everybody, look, whatever your goal is, the girl, the guy, the money, the company, the movie, whatever it is, just whatever it is, take it 10 times bigger than you thought and then follow it up with actions that are 10 times greater. And I go through in this book in 18 chapters and basically give people the actions that will guarantee them that they are successful, period. And we have people that have literally, okay, turned their situation around in this economy. When it works in this economy, it works anytime.
Now, by the way, with all of the experience that you've had and the books that you've written, I'm going to ask you a question. And the question happens to all authors. It doesn't matter what it's, whether it's fact, fun, fantasy, fiction, whatever the case may be. There comes that time in the process of writing the book, that aha moment, that cathartic moment when you realize something about the subject matter that you weren't aware of until you started putting it together. Where was that for you in this book?
That is a brilliant, brilliant question. When I was writing this book, I realized what I learned, and what most authors don't tell you, is that they're writing something they're learning about in the moment. At least that's how I write. I'm actually working through something. And what I discovered in this book as I was writing it is that I had never set the correct target in my life. That I learned from my father to work very, very hard. The thing I didn't learn was to set a target that would actually cause things to be easier for me. Like in this book, I actually discovered in the sixth chapter, oh my God, I need a TV show. And I actually redirected the book to figure out, could I use what I was writing in this book to get me on TV? By the time this book was finished, I had achieved a TV show that would be on TV 30 days after the book was completed.
Damn.
And so it was like, hey, how do I get in front of millions of people, not a handful of people? How do I fill my pipeline up so that even problems can't stop the flow? And that's what Americans need to learn. How do I fill that pipeline up so big that even a recession can't stop me, or bad news, or a nuclear attack in Japan, or a tsunami on the coast, or whatever happens? Because things do happen.
Now, by the way, if you can make it, you're in the Los Angeles area, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, if you can make it in L.A., you can make it anywhere. Because I learned a long time ago, New York has this movement about it, that if you get involved in the energy, you kind of ride along with it. But in L.A., you're on your own. And it's a very good place to be, because it gives you a lot of power. I was brought up there. But it gives you a lot of power, and it gives you many ways to look at things that most people don't look at. And I think the most important thing about what I've heard you say, and the book, and the 10, and the 10 reasons, is basically this. What we need is somebody looking over our shoulder to see what we don't see, because we don't see everything. And the key is to recognize it, to discover it. And that's what happened with you in chapter 6. That's what happens to everybody every day. And just because you're going to get into something doesn't mean you know how to do it. Thank goodness for guys like you.
Thank you very much.
Now we're about out of time.
And just one last thing. Look, yeah, a recession. People should not look at this recession as a bad thing. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for you to really be different and really shine right now. The average American reads less than one book a year. The top CEOs in America read 5 books a month. The people earning the big money in this country are readers and learners. And I would just encourage everybody to grab something and set a target. I'm going to start today. I'm going to finish it by Sunday. I'm going to finish the book. Eat these books right now. Eat books so you can learn and fuel up so that you can push through all the resistance in the marketplace.
Got it loud and clear. Grant, website we can find you at and buy the books.
Yeah. GrantCardone.com, or they can buy the book at the10xrule.com. Or you can visit Amazon or any of the online sites as well.
Wonderful. Hey, Grant, thank you so much for joining us. I've appreciated your time. Go get them. They need you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Take care. Good night.
There are so many fabulous faraway places to see, such as Mexico, Sweden, Hawaii, Japan, and Capri. There's so many exciting and wonderful places, mountains and jungles and desert oases, pleasant as home is, it isn't what Rome is, so why stay there? When there are so many fabulous faraway places to see, Tahiti and Rio just be only names to you and me. I feel certain there's people we'd be glad to know there. So tell me, why don't we get up and just go there? Go to those fabulous places where we long to be, like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London. Wonderful, fabulous places we're longing to see. There are so many simply incredible places to see. When I think of the warm Caribbean, I see a new world for you and me. I'd give anything just to have one single day there. And once we get there, I know that we'll stay there. Stay in those fabulous places where we long to be, like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, Siam, Siena, Vienna, Verona, Java, Jamaica, Bombay, Barcelona. Show me those fabulous places we're longing to see.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Dr. George Scheel with us, MD. He's the author of The Obesity Cure, Weight Control, Metabolic Health, Revitalized Youth with Power Amino Acids. He's a world-renowned physician, scientist, and an author. He's a board-certified internist and world expert in nutrition. He was the first research scientist to show how to separate all the proteins in the human body. That was the research he's now applying to weight loss. Now, as a graduate of Princeton University and Johns Hopkins Medical School, he served as a professor of medicine on the faculties of the Rockefeller University, Yale University School of Medicine, Harvard Medical School. While at Rockefeller University, he participated in work that won 2 Nobel Prizes in medicine. Again, his new book, his e-book, is The Obesity Cure. And let us say, George, hi. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi, Michael Ray. It's my pleasure to be on the show with you.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. You know, obesity, it's so rampant in this world today, and especially here in the United States, walk into any given supermarket, and my goodness, the weight, the kids in school, and we've got so many quote-unquote diets to go on, exercise programs to go on, and usually what happens, George, is somebody will start something, they'll get frustrated because it's not working, and they'll start something else, back to square one, and it all starts over again. What is the missing link?
Okay, well, you asked the $64 question, and let me start out this way, Michael. Obviously, in America, we have a current health situation that really is in crisis mode. And even though we all know this, we have to understand that we are dealing with two epidemics at the same time. One is the obesity epidemic. The second is the metabolic disease epidemic. And we'll come back to what those diseases are, but they're roughly the chronic degenerative diseases that are associated with something called the metabolic syndrome. Now, what we need, and what your question is, a solution to this crisis. And that solution, what we need is basically a lifesaver. And that solution is really why I wrote this book called The Obesity Cure. It talks about a technology where the key word there has to do with power amino acids. Most people have heard of amino acids, but they haven't heard of the power amino acids. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. And I'm going to tell you about a product that's called Factor 4 Weight Control. And I formulated this product just a couple of years ago, and it's doing tremendous things out in the public right now. In fact, right now I am drinking a Factor 4 Weight Control shake. So while the rest of America, it being 5 p.m. or onto some alcoholic beverage, I have my Factor 4 Weight Control, which has no sugar, no alcohol, and no caffeine.
Now, by the way, is that Factor 4 with the number, or is it F-O-U-R?
Yes, yes. No, no, very good. Well, actually, the website is www.factor4health, and 4 is the number. So it's factor4health.com, and that's where people should go to find out all about this wonderful, amazing new technology about power amino acids that reside in Factor 4 Weight Control.
Okay, George, let's break it down. What is an amino acid and how important is the amino acid to the biology of a person?
Okay, yeah, let me get at that in a slightly different way. I'm going to answer your question, but basically, and most people know this, we take in three kinds of foodstuffs. We take in carbohydrates, we take in fat, and we take in protein. Now, what you need to know is proteins are made up of amino acids. Amino acids are the building blocks for proteins. Now, here's the point. If we take in too many carbohydrates, which most Americans do, in what I call the good old bad American diet, they are taking excessive amounts of refined sugar. And refined sugar has now, Michael, been shown to be addictive. That's been shown by investigators at Princeton University, whom I know, and that is called sugar addiction.
Let me jump in with something real quick. Does everything we eat, everything that you buy, has some kind of a refined sugar? An honest question, how do you get away from it? It's in everything.
Well, okay. Yes, you are right. You indicate a very important point, because these sugars are hidden. So they're not only in the soft drinks and the milkshakes and things like that, but it's also hidden in bread. It's hidden in salad dressings. It's hidden in all kinds of things. So that's where people are admonished to take a look at the nutritional facts. But let's move right along to fats just for a moment. We all know that we should not be eating red meat every night, because that's the one protein source that has too much saturated fat in it, and that's why we should confine ourselves to maybe one or two nights of that. Trans fat are actually a Frankenstein molecule made by man that causes all kinds of havoc in the body. But now let's get back to the proteins and to the amino acids. So the first two I talked about, which was the sugar and the fats, those are basically fuels for the body, fuels like fueling your engine of your car. What you really need, if you're sedentary like most Americans, is really not very much carbohydrate, not very much fat, but what you really need is protein and you need amino acids. Now, we don't have the time to go into the fundamental breakthrough of my research, but since I was the guy that figured out how to separate all the proteins in the body, and you have, Michael, 20,000, and every one of our listeners has 20,000, what we did back in the laboratory a few years ago was we began to withhold protein in the diet, and we found an amazing surprise. It wasn't that the animal or the human was then compromised so that they couldn't make enough of their own protein. Their protein team, and remember there are 20,000 on your protein team, certain segments of that protein team actually disappeared. So it's like, I'll use a little metaphor, it's like going to the Super Bowl game, and you're supposed to have 11 members on your team, but what would happen if you only showed up with 6 members? The other 5 you didn't bring along. They didn't show up. They didn't get up that morning. Well, you know who would win that game. So sure. Back to the human situation, that is what I call the deficiency of the food chain, or known in another way, the food chain gap. So the way to treat that or to prevent that food chain gap is to give a group of amino acids that I call power amino acids. They happen to be comprised of 3 things. One is essential amino acids, which, by the way, we don't make. We have to get them from the food chain, so that we all know that's important. Number 2 is positively charged amino acids, and those were the proteins that disappeared first, and they disappeared within days. And then the 3rd are what I call satiety amino acids, and they are the ones that regulate the appetite so you can match your appetite to your energy needs. So the power amino acids are called power, and I made that name, and I got it trademarked. Why? Because they're truly powerful, and they solve a number of problems that can take you down to the bottom line and can normalize your weight, improve your metabolic health, and put you back to where you want to be.
Okay, so effectively, now let me ask you this. If somebody did not, I want to take another dimension to this. If somebody did not have a weight problem, could factor 4 be used in bodybuilding and things of that nature?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because, first of all, the answer is yes, yes, yes. But it's not only just bodybuilding. It's wonderful in bodybuilding because, and I just want to slip in here what the 4 fundamental benefits of factor 4 weight control does. Number 1, it tames appetite, which I've already talked about. Number 2, it burns fat. Number 3, it builds muscle. And number 4, it boosts energy. And so, yes, it's wonderful for weight builders, but it's also wonderful for people that don't ever lift a thing, but they're in sort of middle age, 30, 40, 50 years of age, and they have a metabolic disease. And let me talk just a moment about what the metabolic syndrome is. And the metabolic syndrome is a group of about 10 diseases, and everybody that's listening to you right now, Michael, you and I, know what these 10 diseases are, and I'll go through them very quickly. Number 1 is overweight disorders and obesity. Number 2 is high blood pressure. Number 3 is high cholesterol. Number 4 is high sugar, and that leads into number 5, which is type 2 diabetes. Number 6 is cardiovascular system, from which most men and women will ultimately die in this country. Number 7 is certain kinds of cancer. Number 8 is osteoarthritis. Number 9 is liver disease, gallbladder disease, and number 10 is kidney disease. So that, Michael, is basically 80% of the diseases that people get when they just begin to go down that aging pathway.
Well, I want to repeat something that that's been said on the show for about 5,000 times, and I can't repeat it enough. And the key is with the disease, the reason that you get the disease is because the immune system is not functioning the way it should be. There's a disconnect. Something's not getting to it, or there's too much of something getting to it, or it's not recognizing something. And I think that in and of itself, if what you're saying with factor 4, it is that which the immune system needs to function properly, and then it will do metabolically what you want it to do. And now, I'm not a clinician, but am I close here?
Yes, you're very close. And actually, I consider the immune system one of the 8 major health systems in the body, but one of the most important near the top. And the immune system is absolutely important, and it serves as a good example right now, because what factor 4 does, it takes you out of a deficiency in the food chain gap, which is involved in a deficiency in proteins and metabolic pathways. In other words, your metabolism is not balanced. You're still alive, but you're no longer healthy. And what factor 4 does is it rebalances your metabolic pathways. That includes rebalancing your immune pathways. So whether it's the immune system, which is one of the 8, or whether it's the other 7, that's what it puts back. Now, another very important one is actually the brain, where we have neurotransmitters. And as you know, we have lots of brain dysfunctions. We have people that can't sleep. We have people that have too much appetite. We have people that have anxiety and depression. And the list is rather long, but we don't have time to go through the whole list. And so factor 4, with these very important amino acids that are essential and positively charged and also satiety, it actually rebalances the neurotransmitters in the brain. So in fact, people actually sleep better. They actually have a better attitude. They actually develop healthy lifestyles. They will choose have much healthier choices in what they choose to eat. And when you put that together with the satiety factors that are making them, giving them feelings of comfort, satisfaction, and well-being, even though they only maybe ate half a meal or just a mere snack, that allows them to reduce the calories on the intake without suffering any hunger whatsoever. And that solves the epidemic of obesity. And then when you balance your metabolic pathways, you will then solve your epidemic in terms of metabolic disease, and that includes the immune system.
I hate to do this to you. We're just running out of time now. Can we get a website again that we can find you at and get product?
Absolutely. Well, the product is called Factor 4 Weight Control, and the website, I'll give it again, is factor4health. But 4 is the number 4, factor4health.com, www.factor4health.com. And if you go on that website tonight or this weekend and go to video gallery, you will see 11 3- or 4-minute videos where you'll see my face, you'll see me talking about the food chain, you'll see me talking about metabolic health, you'll see me talking about the obesity epidemic. And if enough people do that, then, Michael, you and I have achieved what we wanted to in this interview.
I'm happy. Okay. George, hey, thank you so much for joining us. I've appreciated your time, and I've been around this industry long enough to know that what you're saying is absolutely spot on.
Okay, good. Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much, Michael.
Oh, thank you. Good night.
Okay, good night.
But I hope you're smiling as you're filing out the door, as they say in this biz, that's all there is, there isn't any more. We've shared a moment.
I'm Michael Ray Dresser, and that, my friends, is a wrap.
I got a funny feeling we're parting out as friends. Your cheers and laughter will linger after they've torn down these dusty walls. If I had this to do again, and the evening were new again, I would spend it with you.